Welcome to Perspectives, a podcast on the future of the behavioral healthcare industry. I'm Jack Silverstein of Behavioral Health Business, and joining me today is Jenna Kokoski, Chief Operating Officer at Jade Health, which delivers the Behavioral Health Center of Excellence Accreditation, or BHCOE. In this interview, Jenna and I discuss the growing role of accreditation in applied behavior analysis services and how BHCOE accreditation has become the leading benchmark in the field. Jenna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I have found in this business that many people in behavioral healthcare or working with seniors at all have some sort of origin story, something that brought them into the senior space. What is yours?
Well, specifically that the part of the ABA space that I've worked in really has been all ages. But I would say that I got started in this space when I was like 7 or 8 years old. My parents drove a bus on Sundays that would pick up people from an assisted living center and would bring them to church. And they were all different special needs and different disabilities. And I just like loved being there and being with all of them, and I was comfortable with it. So I remember back at that age, my parents even telling me then like, oh, you're going to do something with special needs people. Like that's going to be your jam. And so I worked my way into, I became a special ed teacher, and I really started to realize that some of the work that I was doing at schools, I would get on like an IEP meeting and talk to parents about all the great things that their kids doing at school. And they would just be like in shock. And they're like, none of that happens at home, like in real life. And that got me, I was like, I really want to make a lasting impact on these kiddos. So how am I, like, what do I need to do? And that's where I kind of pivoted and went through the behavior analysis program, became a BCBA, and then eventually just opened my own business. I owned my own business for almost 8 years, and we grew really, really fast. And ABA care is in demand, so that's never going to be an issue. And then, you know, I sold my company in 2019 and was doing ABA business consulting. And then Jade came and asked if I would be willing to come on. And it actually ended up being a perfect fit, because when I owned my own business, I had gone through the BHCOE accreditation myself. So I'd like sat on that side of things so I could understand like what the business owners are going through that process. But then also sitting at like taking kind of like a step back and doing the business consulting part of things kind of gave me like the time to look at like the larger ABA field and what's happening in it in general. And so that really kind of like stirred my passion for accreditation.
That's great. Thank you so much. ABA stands for Applied Behavior Analysis. Yep. In this context, and we're going to get to a few of these others, but please tell me a little bit more before we do about Jade Health.
Yeah. Jade Health is, Jade is the umbrella for our different service lines. We have the Behavioral Health Center of Excellence Accreditation, the BHCOE. That was what our company was called before. And so that accreditation line has been up for 10 years now, and the first accreditation in ABA industry. We also have the National Autism Data Registry, which is benchmarking clinical outcomes in the autism field, which is really interesting. There's a lot of benchmarking and outcomes related work in many other sectors, but not in ABA at all. So that has been up and running for over a year. And then we also have Quick Start, which is like consulting for new orgs that are just getting started, try to help them get on the path, essentially setting themselves up the right way so that they will be able one day to pass accreditation.
Very good. Tell us about accreditation in the ABA. Why specifically does it matter right now?
So there's definitely a huge influx of accreditation happening across payers, both, you know, Medicaid payers as well as private payers. And really where this is stemming from is from the fraud and abuse that has gone on in the ABA field. I think a lot of payers are trying to figure out how can I make sure that, you know, what I'm paying people or the people, the orgs that I am paying is actually doing things ethically and correctly. And so really that's where we're seeing the big influx right now. We have, you know, Massachusetts has a mandate out for the state, but we are constantly hearing of smaller payers that have already implemented this. And we're in lots of communication with lots of different states that are in that process right now, figuring out what would work best for them.
Are there any other states that are particularly interesting to you with interesting things going on? I mean, you mentioned Massachusetts. I think people are always interested to know what's going on in their state. You can't cover all the other 49, but yeah. Others that pop out to you.
Yeah. Some of the big ones are, Indiana, Indiana and Ohio, they've had quite a few, a large uptick, and they've been doing their evaluations on seeing, you know, if there's any recourse that needs to happen for a payment that was sent out. And so accreditation is something that's on the table for them, as well as Wisconsin, and Florida. Florida is its own special, breed of ABA fraud that's going on down there. So I'm not sure if accreditation is quite ready to happen there yet. They've got some other things I think they need to fix first. But for the most part, the Northeast seems to be where it's there's a lot more talk and stir happening there. The Northeast, Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin, I would say.
Do different types of regions or different states have different types of fraud?
I think the majority of the fraud that we're seeing is either overbilling for BCBA's services, supervision that didn't actually occur or anything like that, or even the RBT time, adding on extra units and padding the time back and forth either way.
So with all that in mind, how has BHCOE helped set the standard for quality in ABA services over, we'll call it, the last decade, or maybe even just, it feels like just this decade alone has been a decade.
yes, it does.
So maybe that's a more useful time frame.
Yeah. So first I'll start with how our standards are created. We are ANSI certified, so American National, I always forget what it's called, the American National Standards Institute. And they are like our accrediting body. So that means that our standards have to be made in a certain way, which is very open and transparent. And we have many stakeholders at the table. So our standard committee has providers, family members, payers, autistic individuals. So we kind of cover the gamut on all of that, and we make sure that they're involved. We have all different stakeholders involved, but then also once standards are created or adjusted or anything, we go to open forum. So open comment time where people have to, you know, they can come in and comment, agree, disagree, bring up new ideas, and then we have to bring it back to the committee, and those have to all be voted on as well. So it's a very long process, but it's very much needed and structured. And we open it up every 2 years for review, and specifically because our field is so young, we're constantly learning about new things that happened that we're like, oh man, we got to put that into place. This should be a standard, or should be that this does not occur, should be the standard. So I think us continually evolving the standard set, I think is really important. So we're not just evolving it for no reason. And nobody within JADE is on the committee. So it's really outside stakeholders that kind of help us keep up to date and learning, you know, new areas that are going on and fraud that might be happening when we're doing our evaluation for accreditation, we are looking at not just clinical documentation and clinical things. We're looking at all operational items as well, including HR. And we do a review of their clinical documentation. So are there treatment plans? Are there session notes? Are all those different ones that essentially they'll be billing for, are they being done correctly? And so really ensuring that all those things are being done correctly is what a payer is saying, okay, if you can show that you're doing this, then you're most likely not going to be committing fraud against us. And accreditation only lasts for 2 years. So we're not like saying, oh, you got it and you're good to go forever. This is a continual thing to make sure that you're continuing to follow the best standards.
Are there top areas or trends that you see most frequently with payers and state mandates that make accreditation increasingly necessary?
I think there's a few. One of our processes is that we review the staff information and verification of their credentials. So that's not just BCBAs, but if you're an RBT, and we follow the practice of RBTs should not be 1099. They should be W-2. So that actually is one area that we see a lot of problems with, is having 1099 staff members still. And then I would say the other is really the clinical documentation of things, which includes like the session notes and all of that. When we review them, we really ask the questions to determine, was that actually like a supervision time? Should that have been billed, or is that something that would actually fall under the non-billable time? So kind of going back and forth on that. And then the other thing is that I think payers are wanting to see, they're always surprised when they see this in our standard set, is that we're looking also that you have financial operations in place. And so you're actually like making plans for your finances in order to remain open and, you know, sustainable. We've had lots of payers who have been very excited that we're even looking at that. So it kind of proves that you're not just in this for a quick buck, and that you're putting things in the right order to be sustainable business.
Perfect. You did mention compliance. I'm curious to know, how does accreditation go beyond compliance to help providers with operations, leadership, and long-term sustainability?
You know, this is one area that we've heard from a lot of different organizations that accreditation really helps, especially newer orgs, kind of get everything, all their ducks in a row, operationally, clinically, ethically, financially, so that they are ready to grow and be sustainable. We focus on 11 domains within our evaluation. So that's operational, clinical, then ethics, but also financials, like I said. So we're not necessarily looking at what your financials are, but we want to make sure that you have processes in place to be fiscally responsible. And I think having that check every 2 years of being able to say, okay, what do I have everything in place? Am I still on the right track? We have a lot of orgs that usually right before their renewal time, that's when they sit down as a leadership team and usually say, okay, like the next 2 years, what do we want to see? And really start to do that strategic talk at that time. So I think that that's really important. The other thing is we really try hard to make sure that we encompass like a community within JADE and BHCOE. And so we have a group called, we call it peer mentorship clusters, where we have leadership from many of the different accredited orgs. We try to get them in groups that are, they are roughly in the same position within their organization, as well as their orgs are roughly the same size, so that they have a community of people that they can ask questions, they can filter ideas through other people who are in the same boat that they're in. And I think it's really important that the community part happens, because there's so much within our field of BCBAs just starting their own business, and they don't have training and learning on specific business acumen and how to run the finances or how to do the billing, all of that. And so having that community for them, I think, is really important.
So you mentioned some of these stakeholders. Let's talk stakeholder input. What role does that input play in shaping BHCOE standards of excellence?
It really shapes 100% of it. Like I said, because we are ANSI certified, we really have to make sure that we follow all the processes within that. And so our committee is made up of those payers, providers, educators, family members, and those with autism as well. And so everybody gets an equal say of that. And because we have to go to that open comment time, and we have to address every single comment that comes through, and that can be very tedious and very long. But I think it's very important, because that's where the people within the community can have a voice, and they should have a voice, especially families, so that they know also what's important and what they should be looking for in their own ABA company that their child or family member is receiving services with. So I love that the stakeholders, while we have a committee of 20, it's really open to everybody.
Perfect. Let's talk myths and misconceptions that might exist about the accreditation process. I sort of want to ask like a twofold question here. How can providers use accreditation as a tool for continuous improvement and thought leadership in their communities? And as they do that, what are the myths and misconceptions that they're going to be, you know, fighting against, or that they need to push out of the way? And what's the reality instead?
I think the biggest misconception is that accreditation is just a stamp and anybody can get it. If you've gone through accreditation, you know it is a very tedious and a long process. And that we only look at documentation. We absolutely do not. We definitely spend a lot of time looking at documentation, but we also do parent caregiver surveys. We do staff surveys, making sure that what is in your documentation is actually matching what is being said or perceived by the other people in your community. And then we also do, you know, clinical observations too. So we'll have a treatment plan, assessment, and everything that's done with a client. And then we will observe sessions of that client to make sure that what might have been written in that treatment plan, is that actually what's happening in real life, in services there? So it's a lot more than it seems. And we're not just looking at documentation here. I think that has been a big misconception, or that you could just easily buy accreditation. It is a long, long process. I think that it's a good one, like we said, because it really does help organizations get up on the right 2 feet and be ready to move to the next, especially if they're looking to grow or even just remain and be sustainable. And the community that we create, I think, is extremely important.
This has been fantastic, Jenna. Thank you so much for your time. If an organization is interested in accreditation, what steps should they take to get started?
Yeah, jadehealth.org is our website. And through there, we have lots of information about accreditation. You can easily download the standards so that you can have your eyes on those and see where you line up against the standards right now. And then easily set up a time to talk with one of our representatives.
Well, thank you so much for all this information and from your days on that bus all the way to here.
That's right.
What a journey. Thank you so much. And we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jenna Kokoski of Jade Health and the BHCOE Accreditation, for joining us on the Perspectives Podcast from Behavioral Health Business. To hear more episodes, visit bhbusiness.com/podcast.